You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Hi, this is Alex Ruggieri. Thanks for joining us today. And we have a great lineup for you today, starting out with Paul Rudy. And Paul is the founder of Rudy Wealth Management. Welcome.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I always enjoy visiting with you.
Oh, I bumped into you at the airport and I said, hey, you know, it's been a couple of years since you've been on the show. And honestly, it's been really fun watching all the things that have happened with you in the last couple of years and how wonderfully they've grown. And with the boys and everything else going on with Rudy Wealth, I thought, hey, we need a report. We need an update. And so I thought it'd be great to have you on the show and talk about it.
Well, I'm happy to. And as you stated, unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize that I'm suddenly back on my own again and kind of recreating my company for a variety of reasons. And all of a sudden, son David wanted to join me. And at that time, he was working for Dimensional Fund Advisors, which is the fifth largest mutual fund company out in Austin, Texas. I know you're down there a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And my son Paul was also working there. So first David announced, I don't think I had a vote, that he was coming back to town and wanted to work with me. And son Paul then quickly decided that doesn't sound like such a bad idea. And then poor Daniel, the youngest one, he wanted to go work for Dimensional and put in his 2 years of kind of an internship, it's really a think tank of just Nobel Prize winners.
Amazing.
And his brothers didn't give him a choice. They drafted him because we needed him, because we've actually had, knock on wood, we've been very fortunate, but our company has grown dramatically and we've had to add staff. And then about a year ago, Ryan Repko, who's my son-in-law, I call him the plus one. he's been wanting to join us too. And we have plenty of work to do. And my only prerequisite was you all have to pass your certified financial planner designation, which they have. And
that's not easy to do.
Well, I think, you know, these kids study so much, and Ryan had just finished his MBA school here at the University of Illinois. Last thing he probably wanted to do is study. It's not an easy, it's a difficult task. It takes a couple of years to get it for most people. But it's very helpful designation because it's really the essence of what we do. And now David and Daniel have gone on to get the retirement income certified professional, which is really just more about, in reality, retirement is fundamentally an income problem. Mm-hmm. And that particular designation is really centered around how do you create income streams from assets and your other income streams in the most sensible fashion. So just a lot of theory there that they learned, and they felt like that was even more practical to what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think it's fantastic. And I asked you before we came on air, you know, what's it like working with your boys? I have to preface that, you know, because I, you know, my whole team is family.
Well.
But I wanted to get your take on it, and your immediate, without, you know, a blink of an eye, is like, I love it.
Well, I love it, you know, and people, I think they expect you to say that just because even if it wasn't, that's what you want to say.
Right.
But let's face it, family companies are not easy.
Right.
Running a company, as you know, is not easy.
Yes.
Just, you know,
period.
I always say what I do on a day-to-day basis with clients is easy. It's running a company that's tough.
Yeah.
But fortunately, all my kids have different aptitudes and different personalities. Mm-hmm. They get that Big Daddy is the benevolent dictator. we had to get through that a little bit.
Yeah,
I tried to be a little too democratic.
Yeah,
I realized there's a certain security in a strict father and a benevolent dictator. And it's really worked well for me. David really kind of he's kind of like pretty much running the company, I would say.
Cool.
And I made him the president. I'm not trying to, you know, I want them to earn their own keep. I want
Absolutely.
Them to have their own story someday
yep.
like I do, you know,
right.
coming up from nothing. I
right.
still have half of it. But and so I'm real careful and real reluctant to, you know, how I pay them. And I don't want to you wrestle with that when you have a family company.
Amen.
But in reality, because we all do have different skill sets and different personalities, it really works well.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. And you do have to kind of get through all those other things and figure out how the dynamics are going to work. But
you do.
It's well worth it.
Alex, the thing that really caught me off guard, because we didn't do this deliberately. We didn't think, well, family company might be kind of cool. Maybe people would like that idea. But through our advertising.
I bet you people do like that idea.
the majority of clients that walk through our door, because I always ask them, how did you hear about us? What made you think to come in and see us? I'm always trying to figure out where my advertising is working.
Right, right.
And almost to a person, they say, well, we saw your commercial, or we like this idea, that the family idea just... Yeah. It really has resonated well beyond what I ever anticipated.
In the Midwest, I mean, family values dominate here, and that's why I love this. I mean, you know, I travel a lot. I go all
over.
You do. I mean, I just, there's so many places I go and I love, and I enjoy. I love coming back here because this is the heartland, and this is where people work hard, and this is where people appreciate each other, and I just think there's a lot of family values here. And so I'm not surprised to hear that.
And we all row in the same direction.
Yeah.
You know, the kids, they grew up in a finance background. They all have finance degrees. And as I always said, when all the other kids, little kids were learning about the birds and the bees, my kids were learning about stocks and bonds. So I probably robbed them of certain parts of their childhood. But it's really allowed us to grow significantly. And everybody's happy right now.
Oh, that's great. That is really wonderful. Well, you know, you sent me some stuff that I found really an interesting read. I mean, it's really the beginning of a book.
It's the beginning of a book, Al.
Yeah, it
is.
What
a story. Yeah.
There's no question. And I just wondered how much I could get you to share, you know. Certainly like to talk. I mean, we talked a little bit about your background, your story, and the boys. What about your philosophy? Because that's critical, I think, also to your growth.
Well, I've been really fortunate in my career. Maybe it's random luck, but in the mid-80s, I went to a fee-only basis. That was everybody was like a stockbroker, and you paid pretty heavy commissions, or you bought mutual funds with commissions. I didn't think the future was there. Mm-hmm. And so early in my career, I went to where I discharge people for my advice based on the assets. I try to eliminate as many conflicts as I can. So we're not compensated by what we sell product. So we have an open world, whether we choose this particular mutual fund or another, really has nothing to do with how we're compensated. So the world has clearly moved our way when we see the Vanguard companies of the world at $4 or $5 trillion. The world is moving more fee only all the time. We have a philosophy that markets work, that you don't have to try to outsmart the stock market or the bond markets. Just harness the returns very efficiently, and you'll do a lot better. There's less friction. There's much lower cost, and you get more reward for any uncertainty you take on. I think it's more what they call evidence-based investing. Show me the data. Hmm. And the data is pretty clear that these professional managers that are trying to outsmart the market, the vast majority of them, year in and year out, the data's there. You just have to look it up. Really provide they returns that detract from what they could have gotten if they just embraced the market and bought something as simple as a Vanguard Total Market Index, as an example. So I made that determination in 1990, and the mm-hmm. world is clearly moving that way from this. Yeah, we probably ought to just keep our costs low and harness the returns and try not to outsmart the market. And then about the same time, maybe 20 years ago, I went to what was it's called goals-based financial planning. And that just means instead of just investing and trying to show your investor prowess, everybody has a purpose for their money. And I always said, if you can tell me whose money is it, what's it for, and when do you need it, I can build a plan and create an asset allocation plan that is aligned with that and has a very high probability of meeting or exceeding their goals, at least if history is any guide and it's the only guide we have. So,
right.
that basic foundation, the world is moving more and more towards that. Maybe it's the internet and the fact that the data and the information is just so clear out there that it's just kind of common sense. And we've been well rewarded for that. And I was on the front end of that. And I'm proud of that.
And I'm curious how you embrace that so early on. It seems to almost have on guard way.
In the mid-80s when I went to fee only, I recognized there was too much conflict of interest. I personally wasn't comfortable with
it. Yeah, yeah.
So I could eliminate it. And it becomes a much simpler world. As far as this view that markets work, embracing that in 1990 was really early, but I happened to come across some of the smartest people on the planet at Dimensional Fund Advisors. Mm-hmm. I went to their seminar kind of by accident, mm-hmm. and I sat through a couple of days of it, and I thought, wow, this is clearly the best way to approach the management of money. And I'm called a quick starter. Somebody profiled me from a psychological test one time at a seminar, and they said, wow, you really are a quick starter. So when I decide to do something, I jump in and I do it. I don't sit on the fence. I just do it. If it makes sense, I do it.
Yep. I love it. That's great action. Well, you know, people don't realize, I mean, philosophy is an everyday thing. When we hear about philosophy, people think, oh, you know, some dusty books in the library, sure. You know, or yeah. Some 2,000-year-old Greek guy or whatever. But I mean, everybody has a philosophy, and everybody has a financial philosophy.
They do.
They just don't, if they don't realize, they're still acting on it, even if they don't realize what they're thinking. And sometimes you need to dust things off. And if we can quote a philosopher, he said, an unexamined life, I think it was Aristotle, who said, an unexamined life is not worth living. And if we're not examining what we're doing with our finances, we may not be able to live.
We have to live a deliberate life. And I always said the critical thing about having an investment in philosophy is that you have one in the first place.
Right.
And if the one that you can stick with.
Right.
You can have an average strategy, but if you stick to it, you're probably going to do better than somebody who's jumping around day to day. I've been doing my radio show since, I think, 1990. And so my views are out there public. Yeah. They're consistent. Yeah. And I think that's why so many people come to us, is because they've been able to listen to that and say, wow, he doesn't get rattled when markets are going down.
Yeah.
He doesn't get excited when they're going up. He looks to me like his clients have harvested every point from a Dow 1,000 to 26,000. And I think that stick-to-itiveness, that having a philosophy that I've stuck with, I mean, tightly, I don't budge. I am like the meanest financial advisor on earth. If you come to me, Alex, and you say, but I want to do this and I want to do that, my job is to tell people what they need to do, not to tell them what they, you know, they can do what they want to do. And there's a big distinction in it. And if I have to do that, even if it causes them to walk out the door, so be it.
Yeah.
It's my way you know, what I, because it's, look, I'm basing it on, here's really good research. Here's a real good process. If you'll just have the faith, patience, and discipline, and there comes that pivotal moment, it's going to happen between a client and their advisor. You never know when it's going to be, but there's that pivotal moment when they'll say, but Paul, and it's the four-word death song of investing. It's different this time. And I always tell a prospective client, I say, look, just so you know, that day's coming. And it may be 12 years from now. So just so you know, I haven't added anything to my whole rapport here, is I can tell you what my four words will be. This too shall pass. And at that time, at that pivotal moment, the four words you decide to follow are probably going to be the difference between success and eternal sadness when it comes to your finances. And the thing is, I actually believe these things and I don't budge, and they know I don't budge. And I think that's a real key. And I think it's what a great advisor can do. I'm not saying I'm the only, I'm not even going to say I'm a great advisor. We're blessed in Champaign-Urbana with some wonderful, talented people in all kinds of firms. So I don't think we have all the answers to things. There's a lot of talent here. The important thing is that you find somebody in your life that can, if you don't have the faith, patience, and discipline, go pay somebody and borrow theirs.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. We have to take a quick break for our sponsor's sake. But there's a lot more I want to cover when we come back. Can we do that? All right. We'll be right back right after this brief word from our sponsor. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. Thanks for staying with us through the break. Alex Ruggieri here, and we're talking with Paul Rudy from Rudy Wealth Management. And I just so appreciate you sharing your philosophy, and I think it is fantastic the way that you've been consistent. And I just wonder, you know, where does the courage come from when the market is dropping and things? I mean, there was a period not long ago, I guess it was 10 years ago now, but I mean, it looked like the world was ending.
It did. It looked like the four words, right? It's different this time. Paul, you don't understand. It's different. Yeah. Everybody on TV, everybody is saying sell now because get out what you can because this thing's going to get worse. Where it comes from is a very long-term historical perspective, seemingly unavailable in America. I have this view, and I think it's correct, that the financial media's mission is to extract our long-term historical perspective from us. Because if they can do that, then there's only headlines left. It's chaos theory. This thing could split at the seams at any moment. Watch out. And I think it really comes from, if you have a long-term historical perspective and an adult memory, and someone tells me, how many times have you heard, Alex, oh, man, I lost X dollars or 20% of my money last month or last quarter or last fill in the blank. And I'm thinking, wow, that takes human intervention. Because a 62-year-old that walks in my office today that tells me that it's too risky to be invested in stocks, I have to ask, where did you get that idea? Because you haven't lived it. Because the day that person was born, somewhere around 1946 or so, after the war, the Standard & Poor's 500 index was at 20 rounded up. The last time I looked, it was at 2,700, and dividends have risen from 70 cents to $45. How do people manage to lose money in something that does that? Mm-hmm. Well, it's real simple. Surprise is the mother of panic, and then people panic. They mistake a perfectly temporary decline for a permanent one, and they sell. It takes human intervention. So if you're broadly diversified.
Human intervention. That's
and
good.
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not going to let them do it on my watch because right. I say, look, if you want to do that, I suppose it's your money. You can do it. Tell me where to transfer your account because I think that would be the worst financial mistake you'll probably make in your life. It's that strictness. Wow. And it's when you look them in the eye and you believe it and you're not. And they say, well, I guess he's not blinking.
He's not blinking.
And that's just enough. And look, how many times did I have to say that in 2008, 2009?
Oh, I can't imagine.
Hour after hour, day after day.
And how many people listened?
All of them but two.
Wow.
All but two. I can honestly say.
And the two that didn't listen, in the end, did they come back and say, Paul, we should have listened?
No, that's when I have to say, look, you can do that if you want, but you have to tell me where to transfer your account. Because I think they have to do what they have to do. But
right, of course.
It's my job to bring in that long-term historical perspective, utter my four words, this too shall pass. And if we know anything with an adult memory, this too will pass.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it really comes from. It's that my clients think I'm an incurable optimist. And they think, well, that's you have me invested portion of my money in the great companies of America and the world. I call them that instead of stocks. It just sounds better. And it's really what they are. And they think it's based on my optimism. Well, it sort of is, but it's not really. I mean, I never know what's going to happen in the future. It could be something more catastrophic than anybody's counting on. It's just that. In order for people to achieve certain goals, they have to take on certain asset allocations. And I do have the faith, patience, and discipline to ride these storms out. But the important thing to do, and I tell my boys this, you have to do lifeboat drills all the time. You can't wait till you hit the iceberg. Your client's too much of an emotional wreck. So I'm always doing what I call lifeboat drills in my newsletters and saying, look, hey, we've had a nice run here the last block of time. Be prepared mentally for a 10% correction or more, they come around like a crosstown bus.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let yourself be surprised. Anticipate. You can't predict them. Mm-hmm. You just have to anticipate them. Well, that's the only sensible conclusion one can come to. Because of that, my clients, as I say, when the things hit the fan, it's very quiet at my office. Because my clients will tell me, they'll say, Paul, well, I didn't call you because I know what you were going to say.
Anyway. I love it.
That's very helpful for people, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, okay, I got to ask, okay, because it's been 10 years since the last one.
Right.
And things seem like they're going pretty good. I don't think there's the,
irrational
exuberance? Irrational exuberance that we had back in the day. But it seems like things are going well. What's your crystal ball show us?
Well, they have gone exceedingly well. This is one of the greatest bull markets ever.
Yeah.
And once again, what do we look in the data? Most people have missed it. Most people have been consistently selling their mutual funds since 2009. It's classic. I always say major bull markets do not end like that. They end when the biggest risk is your brother-in-law is making a better return than you. So I really don't have a forecast ever. I don't allow myself to have one.
But, I mean, are you sending in the newsletter, hey, get ready for the 10%?
I've already done that. Uh-huh. I did it all last year, so okay. And we didn't get one. Yeah. We went the longest That's period without curious. A 5% decline.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just my job to say the only reason we're own the great companies of America and the world is because we want the premium returns that historically they've offered. But those historical premium returns have come with premium fluctuation. Don't wish away premium fluctuation. That's the same thing as saying I want to eliminate the premium returns. So embrace it. Recognize that that's just part of the self-healing process, that things can't go up forever without a breath. And so this is just perfectly normal. And so I am void of an outlook other than, and we know the economy in the near term cannot be forecasted. I mean, I'm comforted that nobody can do that. And even if you could, it wouldn't tell you what to do with your investments. I think the long term's obvious what happens. And all I know and all I've learned when it comes to investing is the owners of the great companies of America and the world have earned 2 to 3 times the returns of the bondholders of those same companies net of inflation. That's the only thing that matters. But it comes with premium fluctuation. The reason those rewards are there is because they're unpredictable. Yep. And investors being rational and markets being efficient, it's just the smart, rational investors' way of saying, look, I can get 6 in bonds. You got to do a lot better than that if I'm going to take the unpredictability of owning shares in your company. And so to me, the world becomes very simple when it comes to investing. Owners earn a much better return historically than lenders. You're either a lender or you're an owner of a company. Mm-hmm. You can lend money to banks and buy their CDs, and you can mm-hmm. lend money to governments and buy their bonds. But essentially, you're either an owner or a lender.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting perspective. So what should people be thinking about, you know, as far as their wealth management?
I think the thing I've learned over 35 years is every successful investor I've ever met was plan-driven and goal-focused, right? Or I'll say goal-focused and plan-driven. Every failed investor I've ever met is market-focused and performance-driven. And in other words, planning is the most essential ingredient to lifetime financial success. You have to have a plan. You need a planner. And that is the difference between success and failure to begin with. Investing is actually quite easy, Alex. Mm. I always tell people, I don't even charge for my investment prowess because I really don't have any. All I know is the owners of companies have earned 2 to 3 times of the lenders, and my clients are going to need to own a certain percentage of their portfolio in those great companies. And then we align an allocation. So now all of a sudden I have a plan in place. Whose money is it? What's it for? When do they need it? Now that dictates my asset allocation. How much of an owner of the great companies versus how much I'm going to lend. And now that becomes quite easy. And then the portfolio just becomes a slave to the plan. Mm-hmm. Nothing more. The mm-hmm. portfolio is not the mean. It's a means to the end. It's not the end itself. So I live, as you can probably tell, I live in a pretty simple world where it's really planning.
You make it sound simple.
You have, well,
the Olympians make the ski slopes look pretty simple, but
it's the difficult part for people is without a long-term historical perspective, we become emotional beings. And I've always said 90% of your lifetime return is determined by 2 things, how much you have in stocks versus bonds. The other part is what you do when that stock market portion is down 30 or 40 or 50%, how you behave during that time. That will describe over 90% of your lifetime outcome. So it's really about how we behave more than investing itself. Yeah. But without a planner, it's very difficult to be successful. And it's very difficult to be your own planner.
You remind me of a quote from Baron Rothschild, one of the dynastic families of Europe. And they asked him one time, how come you're so wealthy? And he said, well, you know, I thought about that. And it just seems like when everybody was willing to sell and they wanted to sell, we would buy.
Right.
And when everybody was wanting to buy, well, we would sell. So I guess you'd say we're very accommodating people. Well, and it was all the people that were panicking in the streets and going crazy and like, oh, we got to sell. Oh, fine, we'll buy it.
Well, surprise is the mother of panic.
Yeah.
And so people allow themselves to be surprised when they shouldn't. I mean, it's the dad is there. The one thing that's never changed, I tell the boys, look, you're very blessed, guys. You're going to be able to make a spectacular living because even with all the information of the last 35 years, people still have the same fears they did 35 years ago when I started in this business. They're worried about the government debt. They're worried about a crashing dollar. They're worried about all these things. And because of that, it really, they're going to need to borrow your faith, patience, and discipline. They're not going to make it out alive without it.
Love it.
And because of that, it seems to be the only area of life where we don't learn from history at all. We're just as emotional today as investors as we were 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. That psychological component seems to be impossible to fix.
That's the thing that Khan said when they took him out of suspended animation on Star Trek, you know, after being suspended for 300 years as a criminal. And the first thing he said was, after being amongst the living for a while, was, I am amazed at how little you've changed.
Yeah. And so that's the essence of my world.
Well, we're out of time, but I do want to ask if anyone's interested in learning more.
We're always delighted to meet with folks.
Yeah,
there's no charge. Connect? There's no pressure. They can call us at 356-1400, or you can go to rudywealth.com, and you can set your own appointment out at your schedule,
oh,
at your convenience.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, yeah. High tech, huh, Alex?
I love it.
The kids put all that in. I didn't.
Love it.
And so we try to make it as easy as possible, and there is no hook. We're always delighted, and sometimes we can just help, and people just need affirmation. So always delighted to help, 356-1400 if anybody's interested.
Outstanding. We have been talking with Paul Rudy, Rudy Wealth Management. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Alex.
And don't go away, much more right after the break. And we're back. You're listening to Central Illinois Business. So glad you stayed with us through the break. Here in the second half of the hour, I am talking with Debbie Hensley. And if you don't know Debbie, you need to. She's just come out with a new book. Which Old Lady Are You Going to Be?
Yes.
I just love that title. So tell us about it.
Well, the name of my business is Your Best Third Third, and it's all
yes.
about from ages 60 to 90.
Right.
So my story is that when I turned 60, I stopped dyeing my hair. I threw myself a party and I got sassy. That's my story, and I'm sticking
it.
With it.
I love it.
And so I was thinking a couple of days later, 60, you know, time to slow down, maybe think retirement. And I thought, wait a minute, my mother's 90.
Yeah.
And if I live to be 90, that's 30 more years, which is
Good
a
point.
Huge responsibility. And an opportunity.
Right.
And I thought, well, I can't really slow down for 30 years. So what am I going to do? What do I need to do at this time? And so then because I'm really, really good at math, I figured out that 30 of 90 is a third.
Yeah.
So it's the third third of my life. And so I am making
third,
it
third.
The best possible one ever.
Oh,
so the
I love
book,
that.
So the book is a lot. It's not really designed just for people in their third third. It's really uh-huh. for any age because we are becoming who we will be in our third third, no matter what age we are. So I used to go and visit in a nursing home with my little boys, and I got to noticing there are kind of two kinds of people in the nursing home. There's the nice ones, you know,
yeah.
with butterscotch candies in their pockets
right.
and like the visit. And then there are the other kind of ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the kind of cranky ones.
Yeah. So yeah. the premise with the book is, which old woman will you be? Are you going to
yeah.
be the nice one that people look forward to seeing that continues to contribute? Or are you going to be the grumpy one or the one who just kind of retreats and, you know, waits to die because they don't think there's anything else to do.
Yeah. I was just on a plane coming back home, and there was a movie on there, you know, and you get nothing else to do on the plane. I watched it called Maudie, and it was about folk artist Maude Lewis. It was a small independent film, but it was really wonderful. And in the film, Maudie is kind of used and abused by everybody in her life. And she ends up becoming like world famous as this folk artist.
Huh.
And one of the conversations that she had with her aunt, who basically, you know, didn't throw her out of the house, but made it hard for her to live there. So she had to move out. And in the end, you know, she said, you know, I've just wanted to settle some things. I think I'm going to be dying soon. I just wanted to tell you some things. And she told her some things about her life that had been a secret and all these things. But then she said, one of the things I really observed is you're the only one in our family who's actually lived a happy life.
Hmm. Yeah.
And how many people really have to come to terms with that?
Right.
And that's why I so appreciate your attitude and your attack on life, and wanted to have you on the show. One of the things in your book you've got as a subtitle is Do's and Don'ts for Living Your Third on Purpose. So what are some of the do's and don'ts?
Well, you'll have to give me the book so I can mm-hmm. use as a cheat sheet. But, you know, one of the points I wanted to make with you today is that, you know, this isn't new for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been training and developing and leading people to be intentional about their lives for the last 30 or 35 years.
I love
years.
That word, intentional.
Yeah. So with me, this is just focusing now on this third, because this is where I'm at. I'm going to be 66 next month.
Congratulations.
And all around me, I just see this huge need, because financial planners tell me that for some of their clients, retirement is the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Oh, I bet.
So they don't know what to do. So they sit down and they become less active. And then
that's not good.
No. So this book is really kind of focused on giving some ideas of how to keep going and how to find new things to be interested in. It's really just about building on what's already there.
Right.
So.
Well, like for me, a don't would be, don't buy a condo in Florida thinking you're going to sit on the beach.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That would kill me.
Right, right.
That would just kill me. And I like playing golf, but I mean, if that's all I was doing, it would be like being in purgatory.
Right, exactly. So one of my don'ts in here is don't get stuck.
Okay.
And it's really easy to get stuck. And I have, you know, I'm kind of a storyteller. So I have stories in here about people I know. But then there are three things. One is that you just have to know what being stuck feels like. Because I think a lot of times people that are thinking about retirement or they're in their third, they just kind of fear the unknown, or they kind of dread what's coming. But they don't take time to sit back and say, wait a minute. You know, I'm still healthy. One of the stories in here is my mother was 72. Nobody had, in her life, as long as we could think back and research back, had ever lived past 72. So when she turned 72, she got up and got dressed and blew out the candles, ate her piece of cake, sat down, and just waited to die. Because everybody else in her family had.
Funny, yeah.
And as I remember it, about 2 years later, she called me up one day and she said, hey, I'm not dead yet. I'm going on a trip with my sister. And so for, you know, the next 20 years.
That.
Yeah. So she had to figure out she was stuck, had to figure out what that was like.
I remember my mom and my aunts kept saying, oh, well, we're going to take grandma on a trip, you know, before she's too old to go. And we're going to go to Rome, and we're going to go to this, and we're going to go to that, and travel the world. I mean, they never did it.
Yeah.
And grandma died.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
It, you know, I mean, do it.
Yeah. And once that, yeah. And then the people that are still living are the ones that have the regret.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know one of my things is just prosper and enjoy. I actually personally was reminded this morning of the brevity of life and how unexpectedly a life can end. And so, you know, I'm planning on living into my 90s, but I know I don't have any guarantee, but I am definitely going to live without regrets.
Yes, I like that.
And
how do you do that?
Well, I think a lot of it is just to be intentional with your life and to mm-hmm. really take the time mm-hmm. to assess, you know. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think we need to do is actually enjoy, like I'm enjoying this moment with you so much. Enjoy the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you can't have a regret at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. I think another, like another one of my things to do in here is to just be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
some people don't know how to be interesting.
No, but yeah. I give some ways. You know, you just have to, you know, one of them is listen to the radio and know what's going on in your community. Champaign, Urbana. Champaign cracks me up. Actually, Deb Finan is a friend of mine, and I every once in a while tell
her. She's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm like.
We love our mayor.
She's a great one. But
she is.
I will tell her, I'm like, you know, Deb, if you don't care what happens in this community, it's really entertaining. Like, you know, when she ran for mayor, there were four people running for mayor, and there were, you know, the school board was turning over, and there are all these, you know, conflicts of interest and these things that were going on. She will remind me, oh, but Debbie, we do care what happens in our community. Of course we do. But, you know, some of it
I went to a city council meeting last night.
Yeah.
And
oh.
She was front and center. And I tell you what, it was a sight to see. It was really cool. I felt like, man, this is America, you know.
It is cool. It's really kind of, I've been to a number of city council meetings while she's been mayor, and even before too. And they are, you know, if there is a, even if you don't know that they're going to be talking about something you're interested in, it's good. But I think there are just some ways. It's like, you know, another one in here is I think people, you know, as their friends die, another, just a story from my mother is at one point she called, she said, I don't have anybody to go any place with me anymore. Because, you know, all my friends are dying or they're too sick or, you know, and she was a little mopey, and I was kind of the daughter to, you know, not, you know, facilitate mopiness. And so I said, well, Mother, you just need to go out and find some younger friends. You know, if all your friends are dying or they're getting old, then go find some younger ones. And so the next week she called me, said, I took your advice. And I called a friend of mine. She's younger than me. She's 76. And she went. They went to a quilt show or something together and had a great time. Yeah. So,
well, and I mean, you know, in sympathy for your mother, I mean, I had a friend who was going to retire and moved to Florida. Again, this is why I love Florida, nothing against Florida, but this is why I wouldn't do that. As she went down there and she made friends, what she found out was she was going to a funeral every week.
Huh. Yeah, that's
hard. I mean, it was just really, I mean, it's like they were dropping like flies down there. And she finally came home and joined the general population.
Right.
And, you know, and then with her family and the grandkids and everything, I think she was a lot happier.
Sure.
But you don't want to get into the situation where, like you say, you know, you just feel like you're stuck and all of the the people around you are older than you are, and then they're dying, and then you're having to face that every day. I mean, I think as a society, and we used to put all the old people in a building. I called it warehousing. Put them in a building way off in the middle of nowhere. Now those things are more residential in scale, and they're usually like right in the middle of neighborhoods.
Sure.
And they're real close to where they can get out and walk and go shopping. And let's all stay together as part of the population. The young people can interact with old people. And
It's good for everybody.
That's what life is all about.
Yeah. Well, you know, you asked me off air about if I still do the information with the behavior style assessments and DISC, and I do. And one of the key things with this book and with the work that I'm doing with Your Best Third Third is helping people not to compare themselves to other people, but to really find their own brilliance. I deeply believe that each of us as individuals has a brilliance
that
we
really
need
cool.
to.
I love that brilliance.
Yeah, and you need to just find it. And sometimes in that second third, kind of from 30 to 60, we can kind of lose that sense that I have a personal brilliance because we have other people, whether it's family or job or whatever, kind of setting the schedule and determining how we spend our time. But it really is important to take the time, even in those times, to invest in ourselves, to say, well, who am I? And what am I really good at? And what do I enjoy? And where do I want to end up? So that we begin to make the adjustments and begin to design our best third third. Because it's not going to happen unless we're intentional about it.
Do you remember there was a mini series, I mean, way back when, Rich Man, Poor Man. And in the story, there was two brothers, and one would get very successful in real estate development, this, that, and the other thing, you know, and all this wealth that he had accumulated. And the other one was, you know, just really couldn't quite get his act together, but, you know, was a sailor, you know, out, you know, in the bay in Florida or whatever. And in the end of all of this trajectory and the arc of the characters and everything else, in the end, the guy who was the happiest was the, what in the book called Rich Man, was the poor man.
Sure.
Well, he was the one, you know, he's behind the wheel of his boat and everything, you know, he's just going off into the sunset, the end of the series, his mini series. And sometimes I think we do need to find out who we are and where we want to end up.
Sure. Because with our third, it's not about recreating ourselves. It's about building what's already there.
Yeah.
And if we've been aware and intentional in our, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, and actually the woman that is kind of my right hand and helping me with my website and my business, she's in her 30s.
Wow.
And, you know, she said, the reason I keep doing this with you is it's changing my life. And now I'm thinking about what I want my third to look like, even though it's further away. But she said, you know, I'm not going to waste.
Maybe an advantage.
Sure. Going to waste 30 years of my life thinking, oh, when I get to be 60, then I'll do what I'm good at.
Right. Right. I love it. Well, tell me now, obviously this is published. I'm looking at a copy, holding it here in my hand. How do people get a hold of this book?
Amazon.
Okay.
It's on Amazon as both an ebook and also you can order the paperback.
Okay.
And anytime that I do speaking engagements, workshops, things like that, oftentimes I include a copy of the book in the cost of hiring me.
Okay. Tell me about your speaking and your other services or whatever.
Okay. Well, I'm very customizable, but I do have a workshop right now that's called Design Your Best Third. I'm really working at promoting that in several different locations and with different demographics. And it's all about, like I said, building on who you already are and designing what you want your third to be like so that when you get there, you're ready to take off running. So you can stop dyeing your hair and throw yourself a party and get sassy. I'm living it, and I want to be a good example of that.
Oh, well, so you really are a great example for all of us, Debbie. And I want to thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
I'm so proud of you with your new book, and I'm going to read this. I'm going to start on this tonight. This is really exciting me. And I'm actually going to give this to my brother-in-law. He lives with us. He's 82, and so there might be some pointers in here for him too.
Good.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. We have been talking with Debbie Hensley, and you might want to check out a copy of her new book, Which Old Lady Are You Going to Be, on Amazon. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back next Saturday.